Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Tammy Drapkin, and as a college teacher on the Neely Taharat Mishpacha Hotline and a member of the Neely Women's Council, I'm delighted to welcome you tonight. For those of you who are not from Chicago, we in Chicago are blessed to have an amazing community Torah resource called the YU Torah Mitzion Kollel, which includes a women's learning institute called Neely, a name familiar to Nady, as that's one of the names of his daughter. One of Neely's many educational opportunities includes a Tara to Mishpacha hotline, which is a confidential and anonymous hotline for women, an answer by women, and they're answering their questions about mikvah, connecting local women with local rabbinic guidance, and providing educational opportunities. Tonight's program, welcoming Dr. Nady Fox, is a further opportunity to pursue this educational mission of sharing crucial information and Torah insights with you, the members of our community. So our guest, Dr. Fox, is a high-risk OB and maternal fetal medicine specialist practicing in New York. He's also the host of two very popular podcasts, Healthful Women and High-Risk Birth Stories. Both of these podcasts are excellent, highly entertaining, and full of important and very helpful information. Dr. Fox is also a Chicago native, a fellow alum of Ida Crown Jewish Academy class of 92, and we've known each other for 40 years. And he's also my sister's OB in New York, and I got her permission to say that. So Nady, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for coming back to your hometown virtually and for joining us tonight. So that's
well, you know, I refuse to come back until the polls were good again, so now is time. Here I am. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful. Shout out to Chicago. I love you all. Miss you all. And to everyone from New Yorkers joining. And Tammy and I do go back 40 years, and it culminates in this event tonight of us meeting over Zoom. So here we go.
For sure. Let's get started. Thank you. Really, it is great to have you back.
So shout out to Jody also.
Definitely shout out to Jody, for sure. I don't even know if she's on, but yes, for sure. Keeping everyone connected. Just a quick housekeeping thing before we get started is that I hope and I think on the bottom, everyone has the ability to ask a question where it says Q&A. If you want to submit a question, we will be taking questions. We will be getting to them at the end. Unfortunately, Dr. Fox, and I probably will refer to him as Nady for the rest, Nady will not be able to, we'll get to them at the end. We can't answer personal questions right now, but any general-
about the questioner.
either. Oh, you know, we'll see which questions come in and then you can decide.
Ask whatever you want. Tammy may just censor it.
That's true. Me or the other person we have looking through questions, we might censor it together. But send in any questions you have and we hopefully will get to them at the end. Okay, getting straight to tonight's topic. Okay, so Nady, I have to tell you, when the flyer went out about this event happening and people read the title, the feedback was amazing. There was a lot of positive feedback. There was a lot of excitement. And I think that comes from the fact that this is a struggle that many, many observant women and women keeping the mitzvah of mikvah face when they are trying to keep a mitzvah that they have learned about and know some about while trying to take care of their health care that they are also trying to learn about. And I think the first question is actually just the question that's the title. Help us. How do we talk to our doctors about Taharat Mishpacha and mikvah? What do we say? How do we say it? How do we share this information with them? Help us. Help us.
No problem. Here I am. You know, it's interesting because I would say that the people, the doctors that I know who I sort of showed this flyer to and said I'm talking about it, they also thought it was really important. Many, not all, obviously, doctors know something about this, but it's a conversation that goes both ways, I would say. And I think the first thing actually about the title, now I did not have anything to do with the title.
That's true.
I think that actually the title conveys potentially part of the barrier. It says something like it's a religious thing or like, and there's like dot, dot, dot. I think what happens is a lot of people sort of approach their doctor with an attitude that it's weird, or this is going to be strange to the doctor, or an apologetic way, or sort of trying to shy away from it. But I think that one of the most important lessons is, if it's important to you, tell your doctor, this is important to me. And don't make fun of it. Don't say it's silly. Don't start with, oh, you'll probably think I'm crazy, or you'll think this is weird, or whatever it is. Just say, this is what I do. You know, Jewish women are doing this for thousands of years. You may not have heard of it, but it's very important to me and my family. Do you know anything about it? Are you familiar with this? And I think when you start the conversation from a perspective of importance, I mean, doctors are going to respond to that. If I know something is important to a patient of mine, whatever it is, it should be important to me. Obviously, if I have any, you know, relationship with that person. And I think that's probably the first lesson I would come with, is be firm, not firm like mean, but firm like, this is important to me. And I think that's really lesson number one about how to approach it. You know, and I think the other way to think about this is, ultimately, this is a relationship, you know, that you're having with your doctor, and it's two people, right? It's you as a doctor, potentially three people, if you bring your husband into this or whatever it is, but it's going to be a relationship that's going to be ongoing. And it's obviously very personal. It's very intimate. You know, people share things with their doctors that they don't share with anybody else. And it's really important that you trust that person. And that's valuable. And so when people are looking for doctors who might respond well to this, you have to be pretty open-minded about what you're looking for. And it might not be the person with the best diploma on the wall. It might not be the person with, you know, the fanciest office or the busiest practice. And it might be one person for you and a different person for your friend. And it might not be the person who has the best Google reviews or the worst Google reviews. Ultimately, you have to decide when you're in this relationship, is this somebody that I trust and I feel has my best interest at heart? And if that's the case, it's probably going to go just fine, is what I would say.
That's great advice. That's excellent advice. I hope that would be something that, I wish that was something that everyone knew to feel all the time. You know, that was a given of how healthcare and a relationship between doctors and patients should be. But I think that's an excellent point that people need to own it and to recognize that it's something that is a part of them. And if they're going to see their doctor, it comes with them. And you're saying it's okay to bring it up. It's okay to believe in what you're doing. It's okay to say it to the doctor, and it's okay to share the idea. I think one of the concerns could be, am I threatening the doctor? Am I bringing them something that's going to interrupt their medical care or the medical care they give me? Are doctors open to hearing about an outside consideration that isn't a medical consideration? It's a religious consideration. Are we going to be threatening the doctors by bringing that up to them and giving them a whole new set of guidelines, parameters? I don't want to say rule. I prefer to say guidelines and parameters of things that they need to follow. And I think the outgrowth of that is, will that affect my medical care? Will that affect a woman's health care that she's getting? Because of the questions that will come up as far as like changing the plan or whatever the doctor would do. Because some things that happen normally in an office might not match the halacha or the goal of the woman who's trying to keep this mitzvah. So I guess there were a lot of questions in that question. Let me bring it down to one question. The first question is, will doctors feel threatened, or is it appropriate to bring in these guidelines and this extra set of rules to follow?
I mean, I suppose doctors could feel threatened. Anyone can feel anything, but doctors shouldn't feel threatened over it. I mean, I guess it depends how it's presented potentially. I mean, doctors, you know, people who go through medical school tend to be problem solvers. It's one of the reasons medicine is interesting and fascinating, is you're trying to solve problems all the time. And so, you know, someone's presented with, well, you would normally do it this way, but it has to be modified potentially because of A, B, and C. I think, again, if it's done in a way that's built on mutual trust and not done in a way, you know, that would be like, you know, just demanding or something. And this is bi-directional. It's the same thing with, you know, with doctors talk to patients. If you demand things, it's a lot different than if you talk about them. I don't see why a doctor would get defensive about it. And I think that's, there's a very important distinction that people have to make. If the doctor's not getting it or not following, there's two basic reasons why. The first is they just don't understand it. Like, they don't really get what the issue is and like why it's an issue, and sort of just a lack of information, a lack of knowledge, which happens. And that's fine. Doctors aren't, we don't learn this in medical school. Like, it's not something that comes up and you know, it's not written about in the Wall Street Journal or medical journals, or it's just people don't know about this. Okay. Versus someone who's disdainful of it. Right. And that's just an attitude. And I think if you're with a doctor who doesn't know, all right, then you can help educate them. And it may not happen all at the first visit. Again, this may happen over weeks or months or years or someone's career. But if someone's clearly just says, oh, you people are crazy or this, well, then yeah, go see another doctor. Like, you're not seeing someone who has any value for what you value. And that's not the person you should be seeing. And I would say that's inappropriate of the doctor, but okay. Some doctors are inappropriate with these things. That happens. Like, not everyone's perfect. But it's different from they don't know. I mean, the practice I'm in, a big practice, and we had a doctor who came from Mississippi, right? I mean, forget about not having to deal with halachic Jews. I don't think he ever saw a Jew in his life. And I remember he joined our practice, nicest guy, just a, you know, Southern gentleman, lovely. And after about 2 weeks in the practice, he pulled me aside. He goes, Nady, why do all these women keep asking me if they're clean? Like, what's the deal with that? Like, are you a dirty people? He's like, what's happening here? And I said, oh, you never had the talk. He's like, what are you talking about? So I explained to him, and he was fascinated. He goes, really? Wow. And he was like, it's not that he was going to start doing it or anything like that, but he was like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense. And so as he learned more, and he's a kind person, he was do his best to help people, and he learned over time. And it made no difference the fact that he's totally outside of the Jewish world and never heard from this. So he learned, and okay, that's what his patients want. You know, everyone's got their thing. You know, we think that we're so crazy compared to the rest of the world. Everybody's crazy. Everyone's got their stuff. Everyone's got their needs. Everyone's got their wants. Everyone's got their priorities and passions, and that's fine. And, you know, we work with people. I have another doctor in my practice who's, you know, she's raised Catholic. She's from Staten Island. And honestly, all her patients think she's, you know, a chassid from Borough Park, because she's always asking them about their bedika and the mikvah and this. And she's not remotely Jewish, but she got into it. She has a good relationship with her patients, and it's important to them. So she learned all about it. And it's not that hard. I mean, like, there's not that much you'd have to know as a doctor. You need someone to explain to you for 15 minutes, and that's about it. And then you figure it out. So again, coming back to it, if it's approached in a way that's built on trust and it's respectful in both directions, you really shouldn't have issues like this. And if it's sometimes there are things that you're up against a wall where the doctor's like, listen, I really need to do A, B, and C in order to do things properly. And you're saying, I really can't do A, B, and C in order to do things properly. All right, then that's something that needs a resolution. And that's sort of the time where you really, all right, let's go to the drawing board. Let's see what the rabbi thinks. Are there other ways to do this? That happens. It's really the exception, I would say. But if it happens, okay, legitimately, we'll figure it out. You know, I think that most people agree that their health is going to come first, but it's not. We don't have situations where it's like, all right, if you don't break Nita, you're going to die. Like, that doesn't happen. It's just, you know, those are hypothetical problems. They're not real problems. And so, you know, sometimes we have to, you know, to do a procedure, and they want to know, all right, so you ask a question before you start. Like, it's not that hard. Again, if you have a good relationship going into it. And I think that it's one of the things that I noted to you, that I think this is much more about, and honestly, I know more about how to have a relationship with your doctor in general. That's what this is about. It's not how to talk to them about Tarat HaMishpacha. It's how to talk to them about anything. Right? How do you talk to them about whatever problem you're having? And it's the same things are going to come up. If you have a good relationship with that person or that group of people, then you can talk about anything with them, and they'll help you. Whereas if you don't have a good relationship, you don't trust them, they don't trust you. It's, you have nothing, you don't know who they are, they don't know who you are. Yeah, it's not going to be pleasant. And I think people undervalue the importance of that.
I think that's
a long answer to your long question, Tammy. How about that?
Yeah, I actually prefer the long answer and not the long question. So I'm going to work again on a shorter question. You should actually just keep going with the answer. Mm. But I think everything you're saying is good takeaway. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to take you to task on one thing, because I think you touched on something, and I'm not sure, we'll see if you have an answer for this. You mentioned that women say the word clean a lot, and clearly that was not the right language to use with the doctor to explain what they were asking. That word belongs back in the religious conversation with the rabbi. And I guess, and I don't know if you have an answer for this or if you've thought about this, but maybe from your experience, you have, even explaining it to your coworkers and your colleagues, what type of language should we use? Because we're not coming in and we're not going to start talking about nida. I mean, that's a religious term. No doctor needs to know what, I mean, maybe we should talk about nida. Does the woman have to, I mean, I obviously, and I think you mentioned this, a woman who's going into her doctor is going to ask about nida. It's, you mentioned this earlier, she has to know her body and her body parts and what nida actually means. And that's on the woman to know. And I think a really important point to highlight here is that when a woman goes into her doctor and is asking about nida, she needs to know herself. And that's, I mean, this is a plug for the hotline right now, but this is where we can be helpful. This is where it is. Our community has to do a really good job educating our women about what it is they're asking about. What is nida? What does it mean? Does the pap smear cause nida? What procedures do or don't cause nida? Going in and saying to the doctor, am I clean? You know, I think that's a great example. He'll say, well, did you shower this morning? I guess you're clean, you know? So another long question, and feel free to have a long answer. Is there a language that you have found, literally words that you have found that work better and are more accurate or more descriptive that help women get the message to their doctor more clearly about what it is that they're looking for?
So I think it depends on the situation. And I don't mean the situation, the question. I mean, what is your interactions with this doctor prior? Meaning if this is a first visit, someone you're meeting for the first time, and you're having, you know, you're coming in for an annual exam and you're asking your history and you haven't really spoken about these things yet, and you don't know the doctor's understanding or comfort level or this or that, and you have the exam and you go back in the room, there's really nothing you can say that they're going to know what you're talking about unless you know, do you know what I'm talking about? And so I would probably preface it by saying, I'm going to ask you a question about a detail of the exam because I'm an Orthodox Jewish woman. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? And if the doctor says, yeah, I totally know what you're talking about. You're fine. It was from the, you know, like if you bleed, it's from the surgery, they'll tell you that. Whereas they say, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. Well, then you can't say, am I clean? Right. You would say, listen, something I need to know is, you know, A, I need to know B, I need to know C. Are you able to answer that question for me? And the questions are generally very straightforward. The doctor would say, well, yeah, here's the answer to A, B, and C. And then it might set our conversation. And that would, again, begin the relationship that you're having, saying, okay, I'm asking because, you know, I'm an Orthodox Jewish woman. We have these rules and we have these laws and this is what we do. And this, and okay. And then it starts. And then the next time you see that doctor, whether it's a month later, 6 months later, a year later, they'll be reminded of this, or they will have had other patients who've done this. And then the second time you ask the question, they'll say, oh yeah, I remember what you're going to ask. Here's the answer. And by the third time, when they're doing the pap smear, they'll tell you right there, you're fine. You're good. Don't worry about it. And so again, it really depends. So the story I gave was a woman who's been to our practice for many years and all the doctors know. So anyone who asks that, we just know exactly what they're asking right away. And it's not an issue. So it wasn't weird for her to ask it in our practice. It's just this doctor had no idea what she was talking about. But then, you know, 1 month later he did. So again, it's really about where you are with that person. If it's the first time you're dropping in on them, yeah, it's going to need a little bit of a preamble so they know why you're asking or what exactly you're asking. But after that, it's fine. And again, I think so many times women are surprised that they think they're the first one who's ever asked this question. I mean, thank God our people procreate. We have children. We have lots of them, and that keeps happening. And so we see our OBGYNs a lot. And, you know, it tends to be that if you're seeing a doctor, probably somebody else who's gone to the mikvah has seen that doctor. And if it's not the case, fine, then it'll start an education. But if it is the case, they probably know as much about this already, you know, without you asking. And again, if that's the case and they seem to hate you for it, yeah, get out, get a new doctor. Like, that's not a good doctor for you, no matter how good they are, whatever else they do. If you need someone who's going to be a part of this, then fine. But I would imagine that that's, again, the exception.
Great. I think that's extremely helpful to hear. I think people need, I think women are going to be very grateful to hear that it's okay to bring it up. Just to validate it, it's okay to bring it up. It's okay to talk about. And I think the point that you made that most doctors have heard of it, and if they haven't, they should be willing to learn. I think that's extremely important takeaways that women are going to be able to take with them right away.
I remember doctors, you know, doctors are humans, we're people. Everybody, you know, after that day, everyone's going home to their families. Everyone's got their mortgages. Everyone's got their kids in school. Everyone's got a plan. You know, how am I going to drive my kid to carpool, and how am I going to do this? And, you know, I hurt my foot and I have to see my own doctor. Everyone's got the same stuff going on. And so people think, like, when you go in that room and there's like the doctor and the patient, that there's this like massive power difference, and it's false, right? It isn't. It's like it's two people. One person needs something from the other. And so they, you know, they have a conversation, they try to figure it out. But the point of that is that the expectations are no different from when you have any interaction with somebody else. If, you know, I walk in and I'm very rude to somebody, I should not be surprised if they're cold and rude back to me. Or if I am very, on the flip side, I'm sort of open and I'm positive and I'm inquisitive and thoughtful, then the relationship's going to go better. And so I think that, you know, people, you know, who come to see their doctors, they should sort of expect that, and they should do it themselves. Meaning this being polite, being friendly, being kind to the people at the front desk, being easy, having a sense of humor. These things, it's not like a bribe, like, oh, if you're nice to the doctor, they'll treat you better. These are humans. People instinctively respond better to people who they feel positive feelings towards. So if a patient is very, you know, I don't know, just pleasant and kind and nice, then doctors are, as just people, are going to be more willing to sort of answer the questions and stay late and do this and research something on their own versus the person who's sort of like, you know, like they don't want to be here, they don't like me, or this or that. And so, these things go both ways. Obviously, it's not just, you know, the patient has to be nice to the doctor, doctors has to be nice to the patient. But ultimately, when two people are in a relationship, if they have that sort of interaction and it's positive, they're both going to be more likely to respond to the other, and it's going to be much more productive. And I think that these are really important aspects of it. And so again, it's not like, oh, go buy your doctor a gift and bribe them. It's not like that at all. It's try to cultivate a relationship with that person in both directions. And that'll, both people will be more invested in the relationship, and it's going to last longer, and it's going to be, again, it's going to be more helpful.
I think there are many people wishing that they could create that with their doctor. I think there are a lot of people who hope to have that for their doctor. And I certainly hope after this, people here and everywhere will be able to create their relationship with their doctor that you just described. I mean, that's the ideal. No question, that's the ideal.
You know, and it doesn't always happen, and it doesn't mean it's the fault of the patient. Obviously not. Some doctors are just, they're not like that. Personally, it's just not their thing. Or, you know, people who are in medicine, which is much more technical, like, you know, I do this operation, right? This is what I do. I'm very good at it. I'm very technically skilled. It's what they do. And that they get their, you know, that's sort of their satisfaction of their careers. They're very technically skilled. They might be less personable. I don't know. It doesn't have to be that way, but you might find that. But I think what's important to realize is, again, if this is something that's valuable, right, to you, and it should be, right? If it's valuable to you, it's part of your belief system, it's part of your identity, then you have to prioritize it. And if having that relationship with your doctor is a part of that, then prioritize it. So maybe you do have to go 40 minutes away instead of 10 minutes away to find that person. Maybe you do have to go to an office where you wait 30 minutes instead of 10 minutes to see that person. Maybe you have to go somewhere where it's going to cost you $200 instead of $20 or whatever it is. And again, people make these decisions all the time about things they value, right? And so if it's something where you're only going to find it in a certain circumstance with a certain doctor, and like, yeah, do it. Yeah, again, if it's valuable. Some people are like, whatever, I just go for my pap smear. I don't care who does it. It doesn't matter. Like, doesn't matter at all to me. I'm just, why would I ever be inconvenienced by it? And that's fine. That person doesn't need this relationship. But for someone who is part of helping them live the life they want to live, then yeah, put it higher up on the totem pole and really, really wait till you find that right person or group of people. And that's an important, you know, self-realization of what's important to me. It's a big deal.
Excellent. Once the relationship with the doctor has been established, okay, and the woman feels comfortable and there's all this, and I'm kind of thinking of both newly married women who are kind of starting out on this journey before they've had kids, and they're figuring out how to talk to their doctor and relate to their doctor and explain this, and Nida and all of Tarat Mishpacha to them is new to begin with. So the OB care is new, the Tarat Mishpacha is new, and these are both very big fields of study. You know, like you went to school for a long time to learn all about OB and
no, rabbis.
No, no, well, we'll pretend you did. We'll believe that you did. It doesn't matter what you actually did, but we'll say that you did. And the rabbi spent a lot of years learning all of the details of Tarat Mishpacha and Mikvah. So those are two really big fields of study. And information and psak halacha and medical care, and that's a lot. And when a woman goes into the exam room and she has to either understand both or represent both or mix the two together, it could definitely feel like a daunting task. So to kind of bring up a challenging question, and I actually kind of want to go maybe more on your experiences, you know, it comes up that a woman will be told she's having this procedure. Okay. And she's like, her Nida thoughts go off. Okay. I need to find out if I'll become a Nida after this, but she might not know what the procedure is until she gets there. So is she supposed to ask her rabbi first about the procedure to see if it becomes Nida, ask the doctor about the procedure, then go back to the rabbi? How do you advise a woman navigate learning about both of these big fields? She needs, and I'm not talking about the routine stuff, because the pap smear and the checkup, that's a, you know, like we said, that's the beginning of it. We're talking about the more advanced stuff that really likely could happen across the life of a woman in her OB care and her OB-GYN care. There's tons of procedure. There's tons of changing of medications. There's tons of exams and tests. You know, sometimes if a doctor signs you up, they say, I'm almost done with the question. I'm getting there. The doctor will sign you up and say, okay, you're having this procedure, pick a day. The woman doesn't know exactly what's happening. Maybe you'll say at that moment you find out, but is she supposed to take notes? You know, how in your practice have you helped, or would you advise women to do both worlds? You call the rabbi first, you call the rabbi second, you talk to the doctor first, you talk to the doctor second. How would you advise people on this?
So it's a really good question. And I guess there isn't one right answer, because it depends a lot on the circumstances. If the procedures, there's a lot of variables that are sort of swirling through my head. I mean, first of all, obviously, how urgent is the procedure, right? Is this something I need in the next 20 minutes, or, you know, I'm in big trouble, or is this something I need in the next 20 days? And so, you know, the urgency is going to clearly dictate some of this. If someone needs an emergent procedure, just do it and deal with everything on the back end. And that's just how it is. We sometimes get into circumstances where some women don't get this, and like, I'll have someone like in labor and they need something emergently, and they're like, wait, I have to call my rabbi. And I'd be like, I promise your rabbi like does not know what to do here. You know, this is not like it's not, and I'm pretty sure they don't want to be called, right? This is not the question they want to answer, because they're talking about something emergently. So, all right, that's not the right situation to start, you know, worrying about that. But that's all right. So let's put those aside. If it's a procedure that needs to be done in the semi near future, right? Not within minutes or hours, but, you know, days to weeks or something like that. And you don't know about it, and it's sort of being told to you at the time, I think, you know, you have to start thinking in your head, what are the questions I might need to ask? You know, for example, what exactly are you doing in this procedure? And that's not a question that is inappropriate. I mean, if you're having a procedure and you don't know what they're doing to you, you should be asking questions, right?
Like,
what
exactly? Right. That's a good point to make, though. I think that's a really good point to make. When you're told about a procedure, ask what they're doing. And if someone needs to take notes or write it down on their phone or get the right words, that's appropriate, right? Like, take note of what's going on. Okay, sorry.
Like, medically, like, what exactly are you going to do here? And if you can't, if you forgot to ask that question, you can't figure it out. That's actually a time where the Google comes in handy. Like, if someone says, I'm having a hysteroscopy, and then you go home and says, what's a hysteroscopy? Like, you could Google that and find that out. Like, that's very straightforward. Like, Googling, do I need a hysteroscopy, is not going to be helpful because, you know, there's so much that goes into that. But, you know, sort of nuts and bolts, like definitions, what happens, this, that, fine. So that's one thing. I try to figure exactly what's going on. Now, if you know enough to say, oh, well, that might be a problem, you could say to the doctor, like, well, I'm trying to figure out if this is going to be a problem for me in regards to NIDA. You know, again, if they sort of have a clue what it is, and you could say, have people ever asked you this before? And sometimes the doctor will say, yeah, well, here's the deal. This is this. Or they might say, well, no, not really. I never thought about it, so I'm not sure. And you would say, okay, this might affect the timing for me. Is that okay? Right? Is it okay if I ask somebody and then get back to you whether I do it on Monday or a week from Monday? And the doctor might say, no, I don't care what we do it. Anytime in the next 3 months is fine with me. Whereas if the doctor says, listen, if we don't do it in the next 2 weeks, it's going to get much worse. All right, then, you know, I've got 2 weeks to figure this out and pick a day, or, you know, decide, all right, I'll just become Anita and deal with it. Like, you know, again, these are, but it's really just try to find out what you need to know from the doctor if they're not telling you. And if you can't, and you go back and you ask your rabbi or so, and they're like, well, are they, I don't know, doing this, and they go and do the cervix, right? They always ask that question. Go and do the cervix. Everyone wants to know about the cervix. So, and you didn't ask, you could call back and speak to one of the nurses. You didn't have to speak to the doctor. Say, listen, I'm supposed to have this procedure, and I'm trying to figure out, do they go through my cervix in this procedure? And the nurse should be able to tell you. Probably the person in the front desk can tell you this.
Like,
this
they're also going to ask how far and how wide it's open. They're going to ask a few more details also.
They could. And then again, and they say, like, well, the instrument that goes in, how big is it, or this or that. And again, this is something you actually might be able to find online if it's a standard procedure, or just ask or say, listen, I have a follow-up question. And again, it's one of these things like, listen, I know it's not emergent, but like, if I left a message for the doctor, is there a way to get this back to me? Is it easier if I email it to you? Is it easier if I call you? Like, how, and just be like effusive, how can I make this easy on you to answer this question for me? Because I really need to know. They'll get you the answer. Right? Whatever it is, whether it's on the spot, end of the day, 2 days later, they'll figure it out. They're not unreasonable questions to ask about a procedure that's getting done to you. It's getting done to you. Like, you're allowed to ask questions about it, even if you think that they're not important, or if you think that they think it's not important, it's happening to you. So you're allowed to ask these questions for sure. And there aren't that many typically that have to be asked. I mean, you know, what's being done? Am I going to bleed? How long am I going to bleed? Okay, and they'll tell you. And again, is this urgent? What's the timing on this is a really important one. Because you could always, if it's not, the timing is important, you can wait and sort it out.
I think the way you described asking the questions and making use of the doctor's office are excellent. Yeah. I think describing like a kind, focused, straightforward question makes it easier for everyone. I just want to point out two things. I think that we've come a long way in what rabbis know. And I think just like you mentioned, you've come a long way in what doctors know and how they've treated so many Orthodox women. I think that we're really living in a very lucky time that our, at least from the hotline and here in Chicago, and I'm sure New York has it also. We have a lot of rabbis.
We don't have any in New York, Tammy.
You know, just in New York, right? Well, so you should come back to Chicago, maybe. You know, here we have plenty of, but we do. We really have an amazing resource, both in the hotline and our community, of rabbis who know this. And when they don't know, they have doctors they speak to learn more about it. So I think that's also a really important point that women need to hear. And again, I am mentioning the hotline, and I know we posted in the chat the information for the hotline and how to call or text or email anonymously. these types of questions, because we have access to rabbis who know this, and they can help the same way. And they are in touch with doctors to be educated the same way. And they don't pretend to be doctors at all. They stay rabbinic, but they take the information from the doctor and they bring it to halacha. And one of the things I like to share with women is that, and I think this is true for doctors as well, like we said, you spent a lot of time learning a lot. The rabbis spend a lot of time learning too. The point of all that learning is to be able to share it with people and better their lives and help them reach their goals. So just like you're there to help them reach their medical goals and their healthcare, the rabbis are available and want to be able to help women and couples reach their religious goals and reach their goals in Taharat Mishpacha. So it really is the overlap of these two worlds that happen actually on an individual case. I feel like a lot of people want to hear, so what's the best way to do it? And I think you alluded to this. Well, it depends on the situation, who you are, what's happening to you, what's your connection to a rabbi, what are your resources for understanding the halacha, who is your doctor, what's your relationship with the doctor, and it's very individual.
I want to second what you said, actually, because I actually wrote this down. I wrote, pick a good rabbi. No, because honestly, I think that that's such an important part of this. And when I say good, I don't mean good versus bad. I mean, you know, just like if I have, a seizure disorder, I'm going to see a neurologist. I'm not going to ask a cardiologist. They could be the best cardiologist in the world, but they're not going to be an expert in seizures because they're an expert in the heart, not in, you know, seizures of the brain. And so, you know, rabbis, in my experience, also have certain expertise, right? So if you want to ask a question that's very specific about, you know, pregnancy, fertility, or this, you know, it's not something that they cover in smicha specifically, like in depth, you know, it's not the same thing. You need someone who is in this world and speaks this language and understands what's talking about. And I know because I have phone calls with rabbis. People say, can you talk to my rabbi? Yes, I'll talk to your rabbi. And some of the rabbis I talk to deal with this all the time. And when I speak to them, honestly, it's like speaking to another doctor. Like it's like literally like a medical conversation. They're asking me very precise questions, very specific questions, very important questions, nuanced, insightful. And we go back and forth on this. Whereas other times I get on the phone with the rabbi and it's clear to me, they don't know anything, right? About biology, anatomy, and that's fine. God bless them. They don't have to know this, right? In their lives necessarily, but they're not the right person to be answering these questions for you because they just don't understand what's going on. I had a meeting with some rabbis and in a community, and these are people who like made decisions for women's health. And like, they were the ones involved in all of these things. And I was floored how little they knew about what they were answering questions about. They just didn't know. And I was somewhat horrified by it, but also obviously somewhat encouraged that they're trying to learn, right? They're trying to get that. But there are people who are really, really good at this, rabbis. And
they're
those
at our hotline. Just
yeah.
And for the hotline.
I'm sure. And there's, but you'll see, I mean, you'll work with them. And if you have a community rabbi who's very good at this, then you're also very lucky. Or if you have a community rabbi who is humble enough to say, this isn't my expertise, but let me bump it to somebody who I know, or I can recommend somebody who knows a lot of us. Again, we're not talking about simple, simple questions, but like when it starts getting complicated, you really need people who understand this. So that's a really important part. Just like you want a doctor who knows what he or she is doing, you really, really have to have a rabbi who has expertise in this, especially when it starts getting complex.
Yeah. And such a great insight. I know I keep saying that, but you keep saying really wonderful things that are very helpful. I want to say that definitely in the hotline and in our community, we do have rabbis like that. And I know because I've interacted with them, and all the college teachers on the hotline in the community have interacted with these rabbis, and they are sensitive. And if they don't know something, they say, let me find out. Let me call this doctor. Let me look into that procedure and know more about it. And I would say what's unique is that at the hotline, it's answered by women, because these can be very hard questions to ask. It can be something that maybe someone's not ready to ask a rabbi directly. They're not ready to talk to a rabbi about it directly. And the hotline was designed and set up for women to call to ask these challenging questions, maybe slightly uncomfortable questions. They're not ready to, you know, like you said, people are comfortable talking to their doctor. We would want people to be comfortable asking questions for their well-being to their rabbi, but if they're not, the hotline has women answering the phone. And we bring these questions to the rabbis. Anything that needs a psak halacha, anything that's going to be a big halacha question is going to come to a rabbi, but we can be the mediators in between. And I think our goal is certainly to make a woman's experience with her doctor within the realm of halacha more comfortable and actually really more informed. I mean, that's the goal. I know for sure you practice medicine like this, Nady, both from my sister and all her friends who are all in your practice apparently. And I can't go on, but there is apparently a lot of people who come to you to see it as a doctor. And clearly it's obvious why, because you are attentive and thinking about it and very attentive to your patients. But when you need to balance that, to interact with your doctor and create that relationship, it helps to have a relationship or a resource with a rabbi also to bring these two worlds together for the benefit of the woman, like you said at the beginning, to meet her goals in life, you know, medically and religiously.
And I would not be, I would not operate under the assumption that you're better off with a doctor who's a woman versus a man versus a woman, Jewish versus not Jewish, Orthodox versus non-Orthodox. You'd be surprised. This is much more personality than it is background. And so I think that when you're trying to sort of profile what doctor am I going to go to, that's not going to be so helpful. Sometimes it's just you try, but a lot of times ask people you know and you trust, family, friends, like, who do you see? Like, is she open to this? Does he know what he's talking about? Like, what's it like? And the questions you should be asking are, you know, what's your relationship with your doctor? And again, not everyone has a similar response to the same person. You could have one doctor who some people love and some people can't stand, but the people who love them, that's who should see, you know, him or her. But ask questions like, you know, what's your relationship with the doctor? Do you feel that, you know, do you trust him or her? Does he or she listen to you? You know, do you feel like they have their best interest? Is it, you know, that type of stuff is so much more important than all the other stuff. And that's why you can't get those kind of reviews, and you can't get it by looking at their website. It's just, it's all smoke and mirrors. It's really about just the person and the connection. And that's really the most important part. We should probably take some questions, right?
We're going to take some questions. There actually happen to not be so many questions in the chat.
Not
so many questions because you're answering them. You're giving such great answers. But
yeah, I'm sure that's why. Yeah,
exactly. I have, before we go to questions, you just gave such a great image of creating a relationship with a doctor. I have to borrow that or copy it and then suggest that people use that same image for the relationship with the rabbi. And I think, and again, it maybe it's poetic or maybe it's actually practical, but the idea is that when you have a goal and you need to interact with someone, and again, I really am copying your words, it's about the relationship. And the better relationship you have with your rabbi or your halachic source, the more effective that relationship will be. And I want to really borrow how you described relationship with a doctor and encourage people to think that way about the rabbi who is there to help. Again, the college teachers are there to help facilitate that through the hotline, through your own college teacher, Rebbetzins in the community. They're there to help facilitate that. And I think that might be something to think about that people can take away. And I think you said it beautifully. I'm just going to double check if we have any questions. I think we actually don't. If anybody
felt comfortable. I can tell you, though, that I did check. And to answer your question, Sister Jody has logged on.
I heard early on that Sister Jody is on. So hello, Sister Jody, and any of her friends who joined on. I do want to give you apparently there are some questions coming through. You know, we just had to tell them, we had to remind them that we're winding down on time and now is the time for questions. So they're coming through. I'm giving you a heads up, two things. I want to get, before the evening is over, I want to give you the chance to talk about your podcast. I think I have listened to them. I know many people have. So we'll do the questions first, then you can get ready to give some presentation for your podcast. And I think after this event, we may have a suggestion for a third possible podcast. Just a thought. But let's start with the questions as they come up. Okay, so we it's a little bit it's a little bit kind of what you touched on earlier, but I'm going to ask it just to repeat to see if there's anything specific. I think this could be coming from a college teacher herself, or for someone who works with newly married people where it's very overwhelming, both keeping the mitzvah, learning the language, interacting with the doctor, the whole marriage thing. There's a lot of newness going on. The first question would be, any specific recommendations for how to teach kallahs to speak to their doctors? If we've absorbed all that you said about creating a relationship, and I'm going to use that word, empower them to be in charge of their own health care and feel confident about the questions they're asking, do you have any specifics about how to guide them to talk to their doctors?
Yeah, I have some thoughts. I don't know if it's going to be helpful or not helpful, but I think that if you're talking about someone who's, let's say, I'm assuming we're talking about someone who's, let's say, on the younger end of life and, you know, newly married or about to get married and a little terrified of going to the doctor. By the way, I don't even do gynecology anymore. Like, I just deal with pregnancy. So this is, I'm not speaking from firsthand experience in that sense, but I do see a lot of obviously newly pregnant women. I would say the first thing is be very open and be very honest with your doctor. And I don't mean honest like tell them if I smoked or not. People are actually very honest about that. Everyone thinks that people lie to their doctors about those things. They don't. They tell you the truth. They absolutely don't. But meaning if you're going to the doctor and you're very nervous and scared, say, I am nervous and I am scared. And say what you are nervous and scared about. I'm nervous and I'm scared that this is going to hurt. Or I'm nervous and I'm scared that this is going to be embarrassing for me. Or whatever it might be that's swirling through your head, you're better off just saying it. Because first of all, we probably know it already. And second of all, if we don't know it, we want to know it. Like if someone's very nervous, I would want to say, well, what is it you're worried about, right? Because again, if someone's worried about pain, it's a lot different of a conversation or what I might do than if they're worried about, I don't know, me finding out that they got a tattoo once. I don't know. I mean, whatever it is that like people are worried about. And so just be open and be honest that we doctors take this privacy very seriously. I mean, more serious than probably any other tenant in medicine. Doctors are very, very good about this. I mean, across the board. If you want to tell your doctor something, tell them. Like, be very honest about it. It's okay if you're embarrassed about it. It's like, I promise, like, we've seen it all. We've heard it all. We'd rather know than not know. And just get it out there. It's going to make your life a lot easier. And I think the second thing is, be very specific with your questions. You know, try, like, don't make the doctor guess what you're trying to ask, because we may guess wrong. And so, like, if you have a question, like whether it's a NIDA question or a health question or a life question, you know, don't dance around it. Just like be very specific. Like, this is the question I have. And if maybe please tell me something I don't know, like explain this to me, or tell me what's going to be, or tell me, you know, what I should expect, or whatever it might be. Just be very precise about what you're asking, because then you'll get the answer. Doctors also love answering the question. If someone has a question and we can answer it, that's fantastic. Like, that makes our day. But if we don't know what we're answering, we're just sitting there and talking, it's not going to be as helpful. So I think those would be the two big ones. Be very honest and open, whatever it might be, and be sort of precise or specific about what you want to know.
I can't help but do what I did before. And as you're describing this guidance for how to interact with your doctor.
Oh, you're going to say rabbi too, right?
I am, from my experience.
I told my rabbi I got a tattoo, forget it.
Well, okay, so rabbis, rabbis don't have HIPAA per se, but they certainly are fantastic at private, you know, and keeping understand it. And it's really, you're giving lessons about interacting with your doctor. First of all, I think they're fantastic for most interactions with most people, but I think they're also very, very, and I didn't see this coming in the conversation tonight. I have to admit, this just struck me as we're having this conversation. It's really parallel to how I have seen in my experience as a college teacher that the rabbis want to be there to assist and help their constituents, the Jewish people, the people that their congregants or part of their community. Again, I just think that you've painted such a vivid picture. I think, Nate, if you want to open up a practice in Chicago, you might have some people sign up to follow you or to come in. You never know.
It's one of the things people ask me all the time, if it would be weird for me if like friends came to see me, people I know. And I say, it's not weird for me. Like from the doctor, we spend all day, every day doing this, right? So it's not strange on the doctor's end. Like we're sort of numb to this. This is what we do. But I do recognize if friends of mine would find it very weird to come to me. And so that's their choice. And I say, half of my friends, like they absolutely want me to be the one who delivers them. Like they said, you must be there. You have to come there. I want you there. And the other half is any human being on earth other than you should deliver me. And you have to decide that. People, you know, again, it's the same thing. People have to decide what it is that's going to make them comfortable, what's going to make them uncomfortable, and be honest about it. It doesn't bother me if someone says they don't want me at their delivery. Fine. I'm not there to make you uncomfortable. And vice versa. If someone really wants me to be there, I'll try to be there. But it's about being honest about it. It's not just sort of crossing your fingers and hoping that what happens is what ends up.
So first of all, you haven't been back in Chicago for a long time, so the community's grown. You could have plenty of people who don't know you and still follow your practice if you came back. But there was another question that came up.
I was on the Ida Crown basketball team. Everyone's going to know who I was.
It's true. Yeah, sure. That's so true. But now it's in Skokie instead of West Rogers Park. One of the questions that came up, and again, I think you addressed it, but I kind of want to just mention it, is this is more of a specific question. I don't know if you want to address it, but in a woman's mind, in a woman who's keeping this mitzvah, staining, and you should know we're having part two of this series, which is going to be all about birth control in February. So you are allowed to throw it to the next session for the next doctor, but staining is very urgent in a woman's mind who's keeping mikvah and taras mishpacha. Any staining from pills, from procedure, it's all very urgent to us. And often women will feel or are told from the doctors, oh, don't worry, you know, you're staining from the pill, don't worry, it doesn't make a difference. But it makes a difference. So do you have a comment about, you know, how to handle that discretion? Very urgent to us when we're worried about it, and maybe medically not so urgent.
I'm going to throw the question back at you. What is it? I understand why different people would feel differently about it, and the doctor or the nurses might not think it's a big deal, but what is it that the woman who's very worried about it is not getting from the doctor or nurse that they need? Is it there's a question they need answered, or that they were started on a pill and it causes irregular bleeding and that's a big deal for them? Is it more the attitude about that?
I think it's the second one.
Oh, okay.
It's the example that's coming up.
That's a question. I mean, that happens all the time. People say, you know, we want to do A, B, and C. They say, well, listen, are any of these going to make me bleed irregularly, or which one's more likely for that to happen? And we can't always predict these things, but I'll say, oh, that one for sure, you're going to bleed irregular, and that one you're probably not. And so she'll say, well, I want that one. And fine, like, okay, like it's, but again, that's a question you ask on the front end. And if you don't know, then, you know, if you're here's a spoiler alert for the birth control one. Learn about it before you go in, right? And say, which one of these is going to cause me not to stain? And we'll tell you, it's that one. There's not that many options, right? These are not like mind-blowing questions. We just need to know that that's on the mind of the user. Like, you know, what is it they care about? Some people care about ease of use. Some people care about side effects. Some people care about how often they have to do it. Some people care about, are they going to stain or not? And other people don't. And so if someone says, that's what I care about, then we'll tailor it to that person. It's not hard medically. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is excellent, beyond excellent, beyond insightful.
And a little more education for you.
Bellator Academy. We're both very proud. Excellent. Excellent. And a little bit beyond that, but yep. Got a shout out to our schools for sure. Oh, wait, hold on. Okay. So they're getting a little more specific here with the questions of what if the, and I think at this point, after hearing you, I might be able to answer this question, but the question that came in was, what if the doctor says, don't worry, that staining is okay? No, I listened to you.
Mm-hmm. What, do you want to answer it then?
No, I actually like your answers better. Go ahead.
No, if the doctor says, don't worry, staining is okay, I would say, no, I understand that it's not dangerous to me and that it's not a concern for my health, but reminder, it's a problem for me, because for me, that means that I'm gonna need a, I can't be with my husband. Like, it, I have to go to the mikvah 14 days, like whatever it is. And again, if you know this person, then that won't happen, right? They'll know right away. And if it's the first time you're talking about it, they can say, listen, just FYI, this is why it's important to me. I'm not worried about my health, but it's very impractical and difficult on my life because of A, B, and C. And then they'll probably say, oh, I didn't know that. Or, I didn't realize you are religious. Like, I mean, not everybody knows, right? It's not everyone walks in with a snood, right? I mean, like, it's not so obvious to everybody who does and doesn't follow these laws. And sometimes people who you would never expect to follow them, who might not be observant in other ways or sort of stereotypical observant, are very strict about it. And we don't always know that. And so if someone tells us, then we know.
Well, Nady, excellent. Outstanding. I think you gave everyone here lots to think about, and I hope that they will share it with people who are not here tonight, because I think the information is really, really excellent, helpful, empowering, supportive, directed, like gives direction and clear, which is a great segue into your podcast. Okay, give us a few words about your podcast, because after that, I'm going to do a formal plug for the hotline and explain how it works. But I think the podcast gets to go first, because there's so much in both of them and you describe them on them. So now I'll stop talking, and now we're back to your stage. Tell us about your podcast for once.
I'll talk about the podcast. Yeah. So by the way, you're a good interviewer. You should have a podcast, Tammy.
I studied the podcast to try to follow the guidelines. That's what I wanted to do.
Podcast is a conversation with people listening to it. That's all it is. So I started a podcast almost 2 years ago. It's called Healthful Woman, which in hindsight is a really dumb name, because you can't say the word healthful easily, but it's the word health, F-U-L, and then woman in the singular, W-O-M-A-N. Our website is healthfulwoman.com.
We just posted it in the chat. Beautiful. So anybody who wants it.
Wherever you get podcasts, we're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on Google, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Basically, that podcast is every Monday where I talk. I have a guest on, one or two guests, and we talk about topics related to women's health, whether that's pregnancy, fertility, whether it's childbirth, whether it's menopause, whether it's gynecology, whether it's wellness, exercise, yoga, whatever it might be. Someone's trying to FaceTime me. Interesting. That was probably,
You're a little busy.
My Aunt Susie. Hi, Susie. So we talk about that. It's been really good. We try to keep it light. We really don't want it to be boring. God forbid, that'd be pretty horrible. We've had a really good response, and I think it's been really helpful for people, again, just to get good information. You don't have to go to Google. You can get it right. You can hear correct, up-to-date information, the sort of medical side. And then the second podcast, which spun off from this one, when I realized that there's so much to hear about on the other side. Like, for example, if I have a story and I talk about, or if I talk about preterm birth, I could spend an hour on this. We could talk about what causes preterm birth, what happens, what do we do, how do we treat it, how do we prevent it, blah, 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 blah. But there's that whole other side of what it's like to go through a preterm birth. And so the second podcast, called High Risk Birth Stories, which is easier to pronounce, is every Thursday. And there I interview mostly women, but sometimes men, you know, parents basically, about their story of their fertility, their pregnancy, their birth, postpartum, whatever it might be, touching on certain themes. And the stories are just awesome. I mean, hearing people tell their tale, first of all, no one ever gets to tell their birth story. No one ever would be willing to listen to someone spend an hour tell their story, because you know, who listens to anybody nowadays? And so it's very therapeutic for a lot of people to tell their stories. They're not all disasters. It's not all bad stories. Many of them are really happy and good and amazing and inspiring. So for the person telling the story, I think it's pretty cathartic. But to hear them, you connect to them as people. A lot of people, there's a lot of overlap in either experience or emotions or feelings. And it really gives a lot of people sense sort of this connection we have with other humans, that we're not alone. That when I hear someone's birth story, there's like so much overlap with your own stories. And it's just really, it's been very connecting, very powerful. I love it. It's been great. So that's the other one. That's on Thursdays.
Well,
people can volunteer. You can email us and I'll put you on the podcast. You know, people can come on. We take volunteers. Absolutely. Very easy to volunteer.
I would say both podcasts are a lot like listening to what you did here tonight, giving the medical side, the very academic side with the human piece, and kind of bringing them together. And in both podcasts,
we should call Am I Clean?
Okay, so there you go. That was going to be what I think should come out of this. You know, you always think of what's the next step, Nadine.
Am I clean? That'd be such a good podcast.
I think you and rabbis, you got to have different guest rabbis on a podcast covering a different topic of Nida all the time. You'll have a huge following. Different topic, Tarnish Bachaj. I know just what you want to do, but I something to consider for the future. There are still 5 days. You're only dropping podcasts on Monday and Thursday. What's happening Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday?
I'm not religiously sufficient to be on that podcast.
Well, you're the host. You bring in the rabbis, but that was number one. I want to give a quick plug for the hotline, just to explain it briefly. And then as we go over our hour, which at the COLA, you're really supposed to stick to your hour, but the hotline really just briefly works, and we'll post the information again in the chat. It is, there are 5 local COLA teachers who are answering the phone calls or the text or the email. It's anonymous, it's confidential. The emails are all encrypted. The phone numbers, there are no contacts. A phone number will come up, but there are no contacts in the phones. Nobody knows who it is. And you can anonymously and confidentially ask your question to the COLA teacher. She will, if it needs a Rav's answer, she will bring the question to a Rav to get the answer. If she can answer it, because it's more like what time is Shkia, or there's a question that doesn't need a psak, she will give the answer that she can, but she will also bring questions to a rabbi for psak halacha. There to educate, there to answer questions, there to any way that we can get information. The hotline came about because women were looking for information. You learn it when you're a kala, or you read it from a book, or you had some rebbetzin had the chance to speak to you for a little bit, and then you're in charge of this big mitzvah. And we realize the dissemination of information was not going so well. And there needs to be a way to get information out to women. It is local COLA teachers in Chicago, and we are in touch with local Rabbanim. Anyone can ask for any Rav that they prefer. We will call any Rav in Chicago. It is available to women outside of Chicago. They are also welcome to use it. You're also welcome to reach out to us and ask us how to set one up in your community. We'd be happy to help, but it is not exclusively for the Chicago community. However, the rabbis we come to are local here. And again, the number and the text is there. I do want to throw in that the women who are on it are also doing other jobs, so we might not answer right away. Leave a text, leave a message. We will get back to you. We have a little disclaimer of a 12-hour window to get back to you. Anything urgent says, please contact your local Orthodox rabbi. But for educational and less urgent things, we are absolutely here to help. Again, the goal and the reason it was set up is actually very similar to Nadie's podcast. See, look at all these connections. Who even realized so many connections? It's there to get people.
40 years.
I think it's more than 40 years. But it's there to get people. See, doing the same thing, just little different avenues. But it's there to get people information. The more information you have, the better decision you can make for yourself. So, just got a text on a question I just said. So sorry about that. That's the hotline. Again, every information is there. We're going to put up the flyer, leave it up for a few minutes for anybody who wants that information. I'm trying to think if I any other questions, Nadie, for you for this forum, but I think that's it. Anything else you want to say?
Thanks for inviting me. I think we
really want to thank you for coming, and I hope you will have at least 60 new listeners to your podcasts for the people. But if they each tell two or three people, you might get a lot
more. Podcast is free. It is free.
Podcast is free. And you'll definitely
free information. Free information.
If you listen to the podcast, you get to meet other classmates of Nady, other coworkers of Nady, other patients of Nady. You know, you get to meet a lot of people in your world, but with tons of great information, very entertaining. Nathan Fox. So Dr. Fox, thank you so much for joining us. And everyone, thank you so much. We're going to put up that thing one more time, if I can remember how to share the screen. All right. Good night, everybody. And thank you so much for coming.
Good night.
Take care.